Have you heard about the constructional approach to working with fearful or aggressive dogs? And maybe you've heard about systems-based approaches to problem-solving behavior challenges. For this inaugural episode of Fresh Bites, which is a shorter version of the Bitey End of the Dog on a focus topic where we bring in guests with unique and inspiring ideas to working with aggression in dogs, I chat with Sean Will and Masa Nishimuta and geek out a little on the five elements of the constructional approach to behavior change. Sean and Masa are both incredibly insightful and were really fun to chat with. If you are enjoying the Bitey End of the Dog, you can support the podcast by going to aggressivedog.com, where there are a variety of educational opportunities to learn more about helping dogs with aggression issues, including the upcoming Aggression in Dogs Conference happening from September 30th through October 2nd, 2022 in Providence, Rhode Island, with both in-person and online options. You can also learn more about the Aggression in Dogs Master Course, which is the most comprehensive course available anywhere in the world for learning how to work with and help dogs with aggression issues. And special thanks to John LaSala for editing the podcast this season and bringing the production to the next level. Hey guys, I have two special guests this week for the Bitey End of the Dog. I've got Sean Will and Masa Nishimuta. Masa and Sean studied under Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz, who we lovingly call JRR in many circles, and earned their master's degrees in behavior analysis from the University of North Texas. While studying at UNT, they developed and pursued research on constructional affection, created constructional shelter programs to increase shelter efficiency, and trained shelter staff and volunteers. They've provided consulting for individuals and organizations that oversee the care of animals. Currently, Sean is in Florida Tech's doctoral program researching problem-solving in animal training. In 2020, Masa and Sean founded the Constructional Approach to Animal Welfare and Training, CAAWT, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide free training to individuals and organizations that need training and can't afford it. To fulfill this mission, Masa and Sean host the CAAWT podcast, an awesome podcast you guys should listen to as well, the annual CAAWT conference, the CAAWT membership webinars, and more. So I'm really excited to have you guys on. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Yes. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes.
Very looking forward.
Yes. It's great to be on with fellow podcasters as well. You know, I'm sitting here and you guys listening in can't see the setups, but you always know the professionals when they have this fancy mics and the mixer and everything. And so hopefully the sound quality is good here too for you guys. So I know this episode's going to be fairly have some geekiness to it because we're going to be talking about some things about ABA and other topics that may not be familiar to a lot of the listeners, but constructional approach, you know, that's the topic we're getting on. And so what is that? If you were to give sort of a canned response, somebody comes up to you on the street and be like, hey, Sean Amos, what's this constructional thing you're doing? How would you answer that?
Well, you know, in animal training in general, we have loads and loads of different procedures, approaches, and techniques. And sometimes it can feel a bit heavy, you know, trying to figure out when we're in a situation which technique or approach might be the most useful or the most efficient for that moment. And the constructional approach gives us a method to guide the application of different concepts and principles that we've gained over the years in our animal training.
Yeah, so it's really, to sum up, constructional approach is an approach, an orientation that look at establishing behavior rather than eliminating it to solve problem or achieve your goal. Mm-hmm. So it's an approach. It's not a procedure. It's an approach to problem solving.
And I listened to another episode you guys were on talking about this, and there's sort of a very systematic way of looking at behavior and problem solving and working with these type of cases. And of course, being that this is, you know, again, the Bitey End of the Dog, we're focusing on aggression. Let's jump right into that topic and talk about, you know, the constructional approach when it comes to aggression cases or even other problem behaviors, perhaps.
Yeah, and this is where things get to be really interesting looking at things through the constructional approach. You know, an interesting thing is that we don't see any behavior as irrational. So when a dog is aggressing or behaving fearfully or angsting in some situations, we would always assume that that behavior is very rational by part of the dog if we were to actually step back and look at the situation that that behavior is occurring in. And so seeing that all behavior is rational, we conclude that there are consequences that are being contacted through those behaviors, that if we examine the situation, we can often use those consequences that are maintaining that problem behavior to start reinforcing alternative behaviors. They get that same consequence.
Yeah. And then, so digging into the first element of the construction approach, is that our focus is to establish or transfer or reinstate the behavior that we want. So the very first thing, whenever we are using construction approach, we specify clear, observable, measurable goal that is very, that is something that the client, the family, and the dog desire. So that we know what are the goal that we are targeting to, that's the very first step.
And an interesting thing is that the goals that we set, we never want them to be reductionistic in nature. So if we're dealing with a dog that's engaging in some aggressive behavior, our goal would never be not barking, not lunging, not biting. Mm. We would want to know, what would you actually like the dog to be doing in these situations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when we talk about the construction aggression treatment or CAT, the goal is to turn aggressive or fearful behavior into friendly interaction. So the goal would be, let's say the dog is engaging aggressive behavior, showing teeth, lunging, and barking towards other dog. The goal will be that they have a very good friendly interaction. They get along really well, have a good time cuddling and doing that together. So that's going to be the goal for aggressive or fearful case.
And you brought up an important point there, too. It's that we're not necessarily ever looking to eliminate what is considered sort of normal behavior in some contexts, the dog's response to some threatening stimulus in the environment, right? And so we're often making sure that, and that's something, a conversation I have with a lot of my clients is making sure they understand, you know, we're not going to turn it off like a light switch. That aggressive behavior is in that dog's repertoire. We just want to make it much less likely for them to reach for that behavior because we've reinforced alternative responses. And we've also worked on changing the underlying motivation for that particular response. So I like to use a lot of examples. So let's use a hypothetical case here as we kind of go through this approach. Let's use the dog that has issues with strangers, you know, coming out to the property, approaching the dog. So that's our hypothetical case. We have Mr. and Mrs. Jones out in Tennessee that hire you for a dog, a German Shepherd that's barking, lunging at strangers that come onto the property, approach the dog. So we'll use that as we go along. So our goal, let's say that's the, and you guys talk about like the five elements of this, and we'll get more into that in just a moment. But our goal for that particular dog might, let's say we want the dog to maybe approach in an affiliative way, or we want to see other behaviors, maybe just looking at the person approaching, or maybe checking in with the owner. So some establishing some replacement, desirable replacement behaviors would be sort of the goal, I guess. Would that be accurate in terms of the first step in the constructional approach?
Yeah, yeah. You know, part of that too. So if we would actually want to know what would the interaction be between the people approaching on the property and the dog. Is it something where the individuals are happy managing it and controlling the behavior the whole time? Or in the future, would they like to be able to have people visit on the property and expect the dog to interact with them in a friendly manner? And so that would be something we would want to definitely analyze in that situation.
So let's put that as our goal in this hypothetical case. We want people that come over to be able to walk onto the property and the dog maybe interacts with them with, maybe no, let's not be too lofty though. Let's say not necessarily the person could just reach up and start petting the dog, but that dog is going to approach the person, sniff the person, and maybe just walk away after that without seeing any aggressive behavior. So we'll put that as our goal. So you also mentioned some other elements. So what is the second element we're looking at in the constructional approach?
Yeah. So the second element is that we ask, where are we now? In a technical term, if you go to Gold, Diamond, and Joe's paper, we talk about what are currently relevant behavior repertoire that the family and dog both have that are very relevant to our program or the goal. So to answer that question, there are a series of questions that we can ask to identify where we can start. And then this is really the starting point of the program. For example, under what condition the dog is already doing some desirable behavior when the person is in, like, close to him?
Well, and maybe not even necessarily on the property. Like, right. We could ask, like, does the dog greet other people on other property friendly? Mm. Does the dog greet people at the park friendly? Mm-hmm. What about people once when they're inside the house? Does the dog interact with them friendly? And so those would all be current relevant repertoires that might even make for really good starting points of the training program. And piggybacking off of that just a little bit, I got to stress too the importance of doing an assessment before starting in on a program using the constructional aggression treatment. Never when working with a dog that's displaying aggressive behavior do I think we can always make the assumption that it's a negative reinforcement contingency. For example, a lot of dogs that might be in the home whenever someone approaches the property and they start behaving in an aggressive manner, the humans might actually, for some reason, maybe they liked that at first. And so for a while, maybe they pet the dog and rewarded it for doing those behaviors. And so there might be a situation where we're seeing topographically aggressive behavior that could be very well maintained by positive reinforcement. And in that situation, I would not recommend starting a constructional aggression treatment program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's say that the dog only have this behavior, let's say this behavior, lunging, growling and stuff like that. And then the family wants to work in the house. And then we do the behavior assessment and the dog is, this behavior is under negative reinforcement contingency. When we say negative reinforcement contingency, that means that the dog is doing like barking and showing teeth until the person go away. So that behavior is saying, please go away, please go away. This is the only way that I can make you go away. So if we find out that behavior and environment relation through behavior assessment, like Sean said, we're going to do prescribed constructional aggression treatment. And then we have to find a distance where we can do the very first trial in the very first session. And the indicator behavior that we look at is, Jesus called it alert behavior. Alert behavior is when the dog look at the person who, you know, aversive stimulus is there, but look, just looking at it without engaging any other aggressive behavior. So that will be the very first starting point. We mark that distance and then we're going to start program there.
That's right.
Yeah.
So go a little further with that, because I think and I appreciate the distinction of defining what negative reinforcement and what sort of maintaining the behavior in these cases, because I know not a lot of the listeners, or not all the listeners, I should say, are familiar with that particular aspect. So go a little deeper into that in terms of, you mentioned the distance. And I know that Cat has had some misconceptions about it, or certainly some of the earlier iterations about, you know, thresholds and the stress the dog is experiencing. And I know some of the newer iterations or approaches has changed that. So you mentioned the distance and what we're looking to, you know, desirable replacement behaviors. So can you explain kind of next steps in that process? If you're going, so let's say we've assessed the dog, let's say it's a fear-based case, the dog wants the other, that threatening stimulus to go away. Mm-hmm. And so we've assessed for that. What is the next step in that process?
So, you know, Moss has really beautifully laid out how we try and make these programs as errorless as possible. Mm-hmm. We want to find that spot where we're already kind of in the best place to be able to get success. And when we walk up, you know, sometimes dogs can appear so sensitive that, like, as soon as that thing, that person, that dog appears within eyesight, it seems like light switch is turned on and that aggressive behavior starts. But even in those moments, we can actually be really crafty where we just like stick a foot out and bring it back before the dog has a chance to really fully react. And we always walk away. And I don't want to have that be understressed. We always walk away. In Cat, we never want to leave the dog looking at a stimulus and barking at it. If we're walking away and the dog happens to bark, we still walk away. An important factor in all constructional approaches is that the consequences are never, ever removed for the problem behavior. So the dog can always still engage in those aggressive or fearful behaviors and get the distance. But while we're at it, we're also shaping up these behaviors that are easier for that dog to do, more enjoyable too for that dog to do, and also more enjoyable for us. And so, like you said, that's how we're expanding that tool set that the dog has to be able to get this distance. And so as we are moving closer, or when we get that alert and we walk away, we go back to that same spot. And we'll go to that spot 3-4 times until every time we approach that spot, that dog, And you'll see it, they'll kind of appear like they have learned the superpower of controlling bipedals or other dogs, to where you'll see their looks. You guys can't see me right now, but at first, like when the dog, when we approach, they might look at us like real whale-eyed and kind of sticking their head out really far, and then you'll see them uncomfortable. But then you'll start to see them when they realize that it's just looking at things that are making them go away. You'll see them get real tall and they're... and they'll give that hard stare like, I'm gonna make it go away. And you'll see their behavior become what I like to describe as confident, where they'll start to confidently look at you to send you away. And we want that really strong. That way it makes very unlikely that any of these more costly behaviors of aggressing or becoming fearful become, you know, end up becoming likely. And so at that point, we'll go ahead and we'll stay at that spot where we're getting that alert, and we'll build the duration there up to like 5, maybe 10 seconds.
Yeah, it depends on the...
Yeah, it really depends. But the longer duration that we build there, the more robust, the more strong that dog's behavior becomes. That way, when we close the distance, come closer on that next step, we've got a stronger behavior that we can bank on, you know, maintaining when we've come 6 inches or 10 inches closer on that next step.
And then when you say, Sean, duration, what we mean by duration is like, let's say that we find this spot A, and then this is the great place that the dog can alert but not aggressing towards the person. We will first go there. When the dog, as soon as the dog look at you, like, I know that you're there, we will go away. And then when we get that very consistently, like 3 trials in a row, we're going to go to that same spot A and then maybe start staying there for like maybe 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then see if the dog can keep doing the alert behavior or engaging on another behavior. Yeah. And whenever we are doing duration, of course, behavior, sometimes the dog will keep staring at the person, but sometimes the dog will do other behaviors such as extending their neck and try to sniff the person, or they may start barking or growling. If undesirable behavior happens, for example, showing teeth or growling teeth, we will immediately walk away. So like Sean was saying, whenever we are using constructional program like CAT, whenever the dog does undesirable behavior or problem behavior, we will immediately reinforce that behavior and then keep that in mind. Oh, that 3 seconds was too long. Maybe we should go back to 1 second, so that we're constantly changing our shaping plan based on the dog's behavior. So it's really the dog's behavior is feedback to our programming, rather than we will stand there, like extinguish, and then, you know, get the other behavior going. Yeah.
And that's really the important part of why we do that, is we want to avoid the animals going into what we call extinction, where they have learned that this behavior gets a certain outcome, and now we're not giving that outcome. And when we stay there, it really makes the dog frustrated. It makes them confused. It brings back all of that aggressive behavior. And so we want to avoid that by making sure that we don't actually restrict any of the animals, what we would call degrees of freedom, any of the behaviors that they have that get this outcome. Because one thing that we both kind of come at this angle, you know, from is that the dog's only reason why they're engaging in this aggressive or fearful behavior is because they have no other responses to get these same meaningful consequences. And so we don't want to take those away from them. If we were to take away those responses, it makes it very likely that we'll contact some extinction and bad experiences for the dog.
And then piggybacking off of that, spot A, let's say that we are waiting at the spot A for 3 seconds and the dog started to do a great behavior rather than alert. They may start looking at the person more, maybe like resting their chin if they're laying down, or they sit, or they will sniff. Those are great behavior we should be reinforcing. So even though we are planning there to stay there for 3 seconds, if the dog engaging those great behavior at like 1 second mark, we will immediately go away.
Yeah.
Because that needs to be reinforced.
It's not my favorite word to use anymore, but we like to say that good behavior trumps all.
That's right. That's how Jesus talks about it. Yeah, good behavior trumps all. But then the criteria for moving maybe closer distance, we always want to stay at the spot A for like 5 seconds or 10 seconds. This is depending on the program, but keep have a duration and then close the distance. That way the behavior is more stronger.
I have a lot of questions, but I also wanted to mention, Sean just gave us the most impressive imitation of a hard staring German Shepherd, because you guys can't see him, but I got to see it. So just to jump back to the five elements, we're kind of jumping into element number three there, the behavior change procedure, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So, and somewhat of number four, right? Number four is maintaining consequences. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So as we're moving through that, I'm sure the audience has a lot of questions as well. So I wanted to throw a few quick ones at you. So you're marking and you are using a marker signal when you get that behavior to keep it very clear to the dog.
That's a funny thing. Like marker signals, whether we intentionally program them, like with a clicker or not, they always occur. As something we do in the environment will always necessarily end up building predictive value, you know, for the learners that are working with us, animal or human. But in this case, what we're doing is we're utilizing the natural contingencies that would be present in what we would consider the animal's natural everyday living experience. And so whenever we're approaching to these points and we're walking away, we're doing our best to not be stereotypical in our movement. We're not being robotic mm-hmm. and holding our arms at our side and avoiding eye contact. We try and act like any normal everyday person that's going to walk up to the dog. We're swinging our arms, whistling, talking, you know, doing all sorts of
looking at the
normal
dog,
human yeah. things. Yeah, looking at them. And through that, we're trying to bank on these behaviors that naturally occur, being able to build some kind of predictive value for the dog.
So marker signals are not necessarily always included in the procedure, but they can be helpful in some cases. Is that how I'm reading it? Or do you not use them at all anymore? Are you using kind of just the behavior of the person?
Yeah, the behavior of the person is something that I have been seeing consistently whenever a person is applying CAT. It's when you kind of go back to your spot, like given distance, mm-hmm. that behavior is always occur whenever the person is going back. So that is marker signal, we can say.
Yeah, that and also the behaviors themselves end up becoming marker signals. Just like a dog, whenever you've brought a dog home and you've rescued them and you pat them a lot, whenever your dog looks at you and you show them your hands, they come to your hands. Mm-hmm. You know, your hands become a very clear marker signal to them. And we actually use that in constructional affection. We use a hand flash to actually work as a clicker when we've got distance between the dogs to signal to them that they've done good and that the reinforcer's coming. And so the same thing in CAT happens, you know, those behaviors of the person end up becoming de facto the marker signals.
And when do you determine, you mentioned the duration is important. So we're looking at time as a factor mm-hmm. in our criteria. When do you decrease distance? So when do you decide the next step to decrease distance after you've increased the amount of duration in a certain trial?
I like to do no less than 5 seconds. But for some dogs, we might need a little bit longer, and the learner will tell us, the dog will let us know. So if we get to 5 seconds and then we go to take a step closer and that dog shows that they're uncomfortable, we'll go ahead and we'll give them the distance. We'll go away and Moss and I will say, okay, so we need to build more duration. The dog wasn't ready for me to come closer yet. Mm-hmm. And so then we'll start building it from 5 to 6, 7, 8, maybe get to 10 seconds and then try and come closer. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of always dependent upon the dog.
Yeah, and I would say the key in the constructional program is individualized. It's so individualized to the point that because we want to know what are the current behavior that the animal and then the human have, and we want to maximize that behavior. So everything is individualized. And I would say maybe in the beginning of the program, let's say that we are increasing from the very first place to the very second place, maybe we want to build more duration here, like 10 seconds, and then towards the end of the program, we may be able to lessen that time, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to watch the learner's behavior.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to continue our enlightening discussion with Sean and Masa. Hey friends, it's me again, and I hope you are enjoying this episode. You may have figured out that something I deeply care about is helping dogs with aggression issues live less stressful, less confined, more enriched and overall happy lives with their guardians. Aggression is so often misunderstood, and we can change that through continued education, like we receive from so many of the wonderful guests on this podcast. In addition to the podcast, I have two other opportunities for anyone looking to learn more about helping dogs with aggression issues, which include the Aggression in Dogs Master Course and the Aggression in Dogs Conference. If you want to learn more about the most comprehensive course on aggression taught anywhere in the world, head on over to aggressivedog.com and click on the Dog Pros tab and then the Master Course. The course gives you access to 23 modules on everything from assessment to safety to medical issues to the behavior change plans we often use in a number of different cases, including lessons taught by Dr. Chris Pockel, Kim Brophy, and Jessica Dolce. You also receive access to a private Facebook group with over 1,000 of your fellow colleagues and dog pros all working with aggression cases. After you finish the course, you also gain access to private, live group mentor sessions with me, where we practice working through a variety of cases together. And if you need CEUs, we've got you covered. We are approved for just about every major training and behavior credential out there. This is truly the flagship course offered on aggression in dogs, and is perfect for pet pros that want to set themselves apart and take their knowledge and expertise to the next level, or even for pet owners who are seeking information to help their own dog. And don't forget to join me for the third annual Aggression in Dogs Conference, either in person or online, from Providence, Rhode Island on September 30th through October 2nd, 2022. This year's lineup includes many of the amazing guests you might have heard on the podcast, including Suzanne Clothier, Jen Triock, Simone Mueller, Dr. Amber Batson, Kim Brophy, Karishma War, Laura Monaco Torelli, Dr. Simone Gabois, and many more. Head on over to aggressivedog.com and click on the Conference tab to learn more about the exciting agenda on everything from advanced concepts and leash reactivity to using positive reinforcement to work with predatory behavior. And if you like to show off your support of the podcast, this year we teamed up again with the folks over at Wolf Culture for some catchy, limited-run conference merchandise. Wolf Culture is known for their witty, nerdy, and no-nonsense apparel that was created in 2019 to spread more awareness towards the use of humane training methods. Their apparel is here to help you start conversations, advocate for your animals, and rep force-free training in a different way. So don't forget to get your conference gear. It leaves the site after 12/31/2022. If you want 10% off your order, use the code BITEY10 at checkout. That's BITEY10. Welcome back to this episode of Fresh Bites, where we continue our conversation about the constructional approach to animal welfare and training with Sean and Masa. So I'm going to throw a curveball question at you guys, being from the world of applied behavior analysis. What do you think is happening underneath the hood? What do you think is going on from, you know, from the emotional aspect? And what changes the dog's behavior in the sense of that motivation or that underlying emotion that often fuels much of aggressive behavior? So let's go back to our fearful, bitey German Shepherd. And the dogs, we're seeing improvements, observable behavior improvements, and desirable. We're meeting that goal. What is really happening, though? What do you think is happening from, you know, the emotional standpoint?
Yeah, I love to reference two people when talking about this, and it's Dr. Susan Friedman and Dr. Joe Lang. They hit the nail on the head with this one. And one thing that Dr. Friedman says is she talks about control being a primary reinforcer. And that's really the root of what constructional aggression treatment, when it's being done well, provides, is it provides control for the dog to be able to bring close or send away these things that they used to be scared of. I like to talk about an analogy of an alien just popping into our backyard. Like if we just go look outside right now and see an alien walking around, we're going to freak out. We're going to get on the phone. We're going to call every agency and three-letter agency we can think of and the police. And we're going to go find someone who can help us barricade our house and set up the defenses and go on alert. But however, if after we see that alien out there, we, you know, notice that it's staying away from us and he's not really coming close to us, we're going to go ahead and we're going to get a little bit curious. We might come a little bit closer to the windows to get a closer look at it. We might start even maybe shouting at it a little bit to see if it's responsive to our voice. And we might notice that all of a sudden, whenever I say sit, the alien sits. When I say stay, it stays. When I say stand on one leg, it stands on one leg. And when I got that control over that alien, now all of a sudden I'm going to start to have a little bit of confidence. You're going to see me probably get closer to the alien. I might even try and touch it. Ooh, it's squishy, you know, and you know, you're going to get real curious, and that, you know, so all that fear through the control starts to turn into curiosity. And that's what opens up the opportunity to be able to contact positive reinforcement now with that alien, where now I'm saying, oh, he's giving me high fives and stuff. Look how cool this is. And so it allows for now that positive reinforcement to take place. And it's a beautiful example, too, of how our emotions actually are what we would call private events that tact the contingency that we're experiencing being a positive or a good one. And so when we're around someone, like I love Masa, she's my wife and I love her, and we have wonderful times together. And when I say I love Masa, what I'm actually describing to everybody here is a really powerful positive reinforcement contingency between the two of us. Same thing, if there's danger, if there's something that I'm scared of and want to create distance from, we would say that now Sean's under a negative reinforcement contingency. And the emotions that come along with that are going to be, you know, the fear, the anxiety, the stress, all of those things come along as packages with these contingencies, just like our behavior. And so we change the contingency, we change the behavior.
Brilliantly said. And Masa, do you feel the same way about Sean in terms of him being, yes. Was your first day like he's the big green alien?
Yeah, actually, yes.
On good days, she still feels this way.
Yeah, but this, the analysis of emotions, it's so powerful. This is developed by Dr. Israel Golddiamond. And then he uses emotion whenever he consults with his patient. He uses emotions and their behavior too to know what kind of contingencies, plural here, that the patient is experiencing, so that we can design the contingency to get positive emotions or the emotions that the patient is after, as well as behavior that the patient is after. So emotion is a key, like you were saying, that it's key in whenever we are assessing our program and then programming for towards the goal.
Excellent. You guys are amazing. And the answer is that's valuable, valuable information, because it describes it so well, because it can be confusing concepts sometimes when we're first looking at behavior and trying to understand not only what's happening on the outside and our observations, but understanding what might be happening on the inside of the animal. So very, very important topics to talk about with aggression. So the fifth element is performance data, looking at the data, which is really important, of course, when we're looking at behavior. So let's go back to the bitey German Shepherd. We got the, you know, you guys are working with this dog, you're able to get closer and closer, and talk more about what kind of data we're looking at tracking and why it's important and how we would kind of imply, you know, use that in the long term to see our success or not.
Ah, that's a good question.
Yeah, the data is something that I actually, that's what I like the most.
That's exciting.
No, yeah, that's seriously what gets me the most excited. Right. And being able to find those data points that, like our old mentor, Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz used to talk about, is that your data should be able to paint the picture of what's going on. And so it's going to first be individual. You know, we're going to look at that German Shepherd that the Joneses have, and we're going to see, do they lunge? Are they snapping? Are they barking? You know, what behaviors is it that this dog does that we're looking at right now? And so we would want to measure those. But we would also really want to be taking a look at making sure that we're measuring the behaviors that are actually leading towards our target goal. Because our target goal, like we said at the beginning, is not no barking, no lunging, no jumping. Our target goal is actually something else. And that's actually a really small, important point to touch on just real quickly, because just having the absence of the aggressive behaviors doesn't mean we're left with the dog we want. For example, you know, our program might end with a dog that's not lunging and barking and jumping and stuff, but maybe they're not approaching anyone ever. Maybe they're staying in the corner of the room. We still have a lot to be uncovered outside of the missing repertoires. And so inevitably, the first big repertoire that we're going to be looking for, behavior we would be looking for that would be indicative of our target goal, would be an actual approach. You know, what is it that the dog's doing that is showing us what we would consider to be a nearing contingency? Better way to say it is maybe what would be indicative that now we're moving into positive reinforcement territory here. And that might be sniffs. Like maybe when we watch the dog, we see that they're staying in place, but they're you know, giving some really good sniffs from a distance, or maybe licking the air in the person's direction. So we would, you know, take data on the number of sniffs or licks that we might see, maybe even steps towards the person. Another important one is we like to talk about latency in measurement, meaning the amount of time that passes from when that scary thing or person approaches to when our dog that was reactive starts to approach. And we might see that at the start, maybe the dog wasn't approaching ever in our trials. And then after a while, they started to approach after 15 seconds. And now right when we walk up, the dog is constantly approaching right to the front. Mm-hmm. And so we would want to make sure that we're measuring not only those aggressive behaviors that are really scary, but we want to also be measuring those behaviors that we want to see. That way we can see the changing, the shifting of contingencies from that nasty one where I don't want to be near you to the one where I'm starting to become curious about you and you smell real interesting to, oh God, I love it when you scratch my butt.
And I will also add that those behaviors, so like whenever we look at the behavior doesn't occur alone. The behavior occurs under the surrounding environment or what we call occasion. So we want to, whenever we are measuring behavior and putting the data point that we record on the graph, we want to also know under what condition this behavior is occurring. So we can take our own behavior, like how the distance away from the dog, what we're doing, like raising hands or talking to the dog, those behaviors, whenever we do those behavior, what the dog is doing, so that we know the relations, and then we are moving towards the relations that the family has envisioned, like the family, like in this German Shepherd case, that somebody's walking to their property. So we have to know that that is happening when this behavior is occurring through German Shepherd. So that we know, oh yes, we're getting to the goal. That itself is a reinforcer for the family to keep doing the program and joining us.
Absolutely. So in that regard, once you're starting to track the data and you're getting the data that's saying we're reaching our goal points, in that occasion, how do you shift to starting to go into other environments? Do you have a way of navigating that with your clients in terms of next steps or a point or a certain number of sessions? Like, what do you usually do in that case?
Yeah. And one thing too, before I answer that question, I just like to warn everybody, please don't be obligated if you find yourself in one of these situations to try and sit there while you're training and collect data. I totally don't recommend that. Please record the session, get your data later, or bring someone else to take the data. But I hate it when I see where like we're going out and we're taking data and we're like interacting with our data sheet more than we're actually interacting with our animal. The animal and everyone's safety has to be the first priority, and we'll collect the data, you know, secondhand later through footage or have a visitor with us. But one thing that we look for before changing, either bringing in a new person or a new animal as a decoy or a new location, before we do that, we want to actually make sure that we've hit a switchover point. And the switchover is where you see that aggressive behavior is now disappearing. And when we're approaching every time, we're getting approaching behavior where the dog is coming close to us, whining, scratching at the fence for us, those kinds of things. Like, obviously, wanting to be closer to that person. We want to make sure that we've hit that before we change up that setting or introduce a new person.
And then that's a great point, because you're very considering the dog is doing this behavior in other sessions. So Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz have a this is another errorless program for transferring this behavior or have this behavior happening in a different environment. Let's say that we have person A did beautiful job of cat, and then we had a switchover, and then we are now doing positive reinforcement training, the constructional affection or something. Those behavior is maintained by interaction with the person A. Let's say that we want to also make sure that the other people are great with this dog. So we will bring person B in the very same environment, but the only thing that changed is person B. And then we will go through the same cat trials, but it's really the dog already learned how to control this person, so it's going to go quick, the program, right?
It typically goes a lot quicker.
A lot quicker. Person B is getting an outcome of person A's, you know, program. And then we may try in a different environment, but the people, same person, like person A or person B. That way we are not changing dramatically the environment the dog face, but changing one thing at a time. And then they are always some stimulus that the dog knows they already engage in this behavior, but in a different, new, just one stimuli. So that way we change up the person, change up the person's, you know, wardrobe or clothes, change up the environment. That way we can slowly expand this behavior into more and more environment. That's how we go about that.
And and your question also touched a little bit on session length. A couple of things about that is that when we're taking data, or even just when we're doing our training, we always say that we stop the session no matter what if the animal's made three errors in a row. Being that we're ideally working in the right contingency, meaning we've realized that it's negative reinforcement, that's why we've decided to do CAT in the session, we should see relatively fast results if we're using the right contingency and the right program. If not, then that's indicative that we're not touching the right contingency. And so anytime that we've got three errors, we stop and we assess that situation and figure out, do we need to do a different program? Are we using the right one, but we need to change things a little bit? So three errors, we always stop. But then outside of that, the session length is usually determined by our animals that we're working with. At one point, you might realize that your reactive dog, maybe they're just turned off and they're not looking at that area anymore. They're not wanting to work anymore. Stop. Please don't torture the dog. If you're using a decoy dog and that decoy dog doesn't want to walk up anymore, go ahead and stop. You know, it's just fine to go ahead and stop a session short. No problems at all. But the other thing I do got to say too is that typically CAT sessions don't last too notoriously long. For example, one of the first dogs that I worked with that was a resource guarder, he would resource guard balls. It took us about 45 minutes working with that dog before we got to the switchover with our first dog. And then our second dog that we introduced, it was done in about 15, 20 minutes. And then the third dog, he was immediately sharing his ball with that third dog when we introduced him. Same thing with the animals in the shelters that I've had the privilege to be able to work with. I had back in Texas, there was a wolf hybrid that was in a really bad situation, had actually been deemed dangerous by the courts that we had been given privilege to work with. And it took us about an hour almost working with that dog before we had him completely coming out, interacting with us, interacting with the shelter staff, and they were able to clean his enclosure and stuff. So typically when you have touched on the right program and you've identified the right situation, we really should actually see some pretty expedient outcomes. If we're not, it's really indicative that we're not touching the right program. One thing that Jesus used to say that I love is he said that there's no rule written anywhere that says just because an animal has extreme behavior means that it's going to take a long time to fix. Jesus said that typically it's the opposite, that when you have a really extreme behavior, it's indicative of a really powerful contingency.
I love that because it's so important to realize that, you know, this extreme behavior is often born out of the things we're doing in our own behavior change strategies, maybe incorrectly, or the other elements in the environment that we can easily control. And the dog's just screaming for help in a lot of those cases, right? So I did want to ask one more question before we wrap up. It's a very common question, especially I get with my students, is when would we choose to use a constructional approach to aggression? And because, again, I think I mentioned it earlier in the episode where, you know, I had gotten kind of a bad rap or some of the conversations, it's negative reinforcement or it's super stressful for the dog. So why not just go with counter conditioning strategies or positive reinforcement or differential reinforcement strategies to begin with all the time when keeping in terms of the humane hierarchies and things like that. So what is that conversation? I know it's shifted nicely over the last couple of years, but it's still, there's some controversy over that.
Absolutely. And there should be, by the way, I love too, by the way, first thing in animal training, how how protective trainers are about what we introduce to our learners. I really feel like a lot of cases, I was also a public school teacher for many years while I was in grad school. I often feel like, you know, I wish that teachers in many cases would actually pick up a lot of that same defensiveness over what we're going to choose to incorporate and you know, for our learners. So I love that. And that's also what helped to make CAT the great procedure that it is today. We try and be scientific in our approaches, not just in making sure that we're effective, but making sure that we're socially valid as well. So when we hear from the public certain concerns, that should not be for us like a, oh, you suck, and like everything you do is awful. It should be feedback to us to say, hey, we got to take a look at this and make this a little bit better. And that's definitely what Jesus and Orca has done with that procedure. But one thing I would say is that I would always say 100% we should be taking a constructional approach with anything that we do with our dogs, problem behavior or just wanting to do scent detection or agility or whatever our goals might be. And I say that too to also stress that the constructional approach isn't limited to just constructional aggression treatment or the procedure that myself and Chase Owens developed with Dr. Rosales Ruiz, constructional affection. Any procedure can be constructional. Constructional is just how we're choosing to apply those principles and concepts that are involved in our procedures that we're using. And so I think it's always a good thing to take because it, in my opinion, helps to make sure that we're being as ethical as possible and that we're identifying those critical consequences that we want to keep in place. We're making sure that we're identifying the best possible starting point. We're making sure that we're collecting good data to reflect that we're moving along the right dimensions. So I would always say constructional approach is critical. Now, as far as using a negative reinforcement procedure goes, I have to say, do not do that willy-nilly. I would actually say that for any procedure. But the outcomes of applying a positive reinforcement procedure willy-nilly, we might have the risk of maybe doing superimposition where we maybe don't completely touch the contingency that we're looking for. But it's not like that's going to be as likely to lead to a bite or something like that when applying a negative reinforcement contingency or the stress that could be imparted onto an animal by just applying negative reinforcement contingencies. For example, like natural horsemanship is a perfect non-example of negative reinforcement contingencies. We don't want to just go find something aversive to present to our animal like what is done in that approach. Rather, in CAT, what we're doing is we've identified an animal that's in fact living in a negative reinforcement contingency. And they, at this point, have absolutely no way to get any relief from it. So I would say when we identify that kind of a moment, using positive reinforcement, although it's a nice thing and the animal's getting, hopefully, a really, really, really high-value reinforcer, the animal's still stuck living and being exposed to that stimuli that they have not learned how to gain control over. And so if we do find a critter in a negative reinforcement contingency, I do say that CAT is the best way to go about that to teach them how to gain control over that stimulus that they're finding so unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say this is really my aha moment going through like Jesus and Jolene and Sean. And like I was with like everybody, like I hate that word negative reinforcement. Whenever people say it, I just... What? You know, what I say? Like, do you know the impact of the animal? And then, but I looked at what kind of application it's used in a negative reinforcement. Like Sean was saying, in natural horsemanship, which is what I kind of have been learning more before dog training, what they're doing is they are creating a painful stimulus that the animal is not experiencing in their natural environment. We are putting a whip, we are putting a metal thing in their mouth, and we poke it. It's a very sharp aversive stimulus that the animal has to engage in something to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I have been seeing that, and I was equaling that as that's the only application of negative reinforcement. So that's why I was so disagreeing with the people. But when I learn about CAT, where they are using, you know, the CAT is like it's done in natural environment, and then we are just presenting the aversive stimulus in a faintly so that the animal can do other behavior to control over it.
Yeah.
So we're using the stimulus that's already existing in the dogs and the person's life for many years or maybe months. We're using it, but teaching them to control over it. When I learned that, I was like, oh, there are other applications of negative reinforcement. So we have to learn those distinctions, those nuances are so key.
And there's also no rule that says that negative reinforcement actually has to be stressful either. For example, rock climbers going up a rock wall, they're under a huge negative reinforcement contingency. You keep climbing or you're going to be in deep trouble. But when they reach the top, you know, they're not like, oh man, that was awful. Like, that was the scariest thing I ever did. They get to the top, they're woo, and high five, and let's do that again. Let's get a steeper wall with less hooks. Like, it can be an exhilarating thing too, especially when it's presented in a way where you can control it and you have total, you know, maintaining control over the amount of aversive stimulus that's present. Yeah,
you guys answered that question by far the best I've ever heard that question answer, because it's a difficult conversation to navigate, because we have our own preconceptions of what certain terminology means, especially in the dog training world, right?
Yes.
Like I said, it's a wonderful thing, though. Like, it's that stuff that keeps our procedures honest, effective, and transparent. Mm-hmm. So everyone should totally keep up any of their questions and anything they got. You know, don't just shed it.
That kind of
something.
That kind of openness is very refreshing to hear. It certainly is. So, where can people find you guys? I mentioned some of the stuff, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But tell me more about what you guys are up to now, and anything you'd want the listeners to know about.
Yeah, so it's really, if you come to our website, caawt.com, you can find everything that we offer.
You know, we've got a couple of things. We are a nonprofit, so most of our stuff we try to keep outside of a paywall. And for example, there's an amazing resource on there that everyone can check out. It's called the Bailey Interviews. And the Bailey Interviews have never been seen by anyone else before. They were done by Marion Breland Bailey. Back in the 80s and 90s, she was really, really, really good friends with B.F. Skinner. She was actually on Project Pelican with him and wanted to do an interview with him to capture his life and his thoughts about the evolving science of behavior that he kind of really kickstarted. He unfortunately passed away before she was able to get his interview. And that sparked a passion in Marilyn where she wanted to go around and interview everyone that she could that was a pioneer in animal training, behavior analysis, or just the study of behavior, because she also got anthropologists, sociologists, psychologists, everybody. And so she went around for years interviewing these people. But unfortunately, she passed away before ever getting these tapes published or made available to anybody. And Bob, it had just kind of broke his heart, you know, when she passed away, and he just kind of distanced himself from those interviews. And we found out not too long ago that they existed, and Bob has been sweet enough to be sending us boxes and boxes and boxes of these interview tapes that we've been converting into digital format and uploading for people to enjoy for free. And we've got some amazing ones already up there. We have Dr. Israel Golddiamond. We have Karen Pryor. Ken Ramirez is we have, but it for some reason, unfortunately, was like the most damaged out of the bunch. So our heads are spinning trying to make sure it's edited in an appropriate way where it's understandable. But we have lots of amazing pioneers like that. Joe Brady is in there. Fred Keller, lots of amazing people. So you can go there to our website and find that. We also have some amazing instructional posters that were designed by Lily Chen that illustrate our interaction guidelines and some other really cool concepts in the behavior science field. But other than that, on the website too, you can find information about our upcoming webinars. We do group classes. We have our CAWT membership. The fun thing about CAWT membership is that our members actually get to select our topics that we teach in group classes and in our webinars. And we have weekly open house where we just get on Zoom for 2 hours and anyone can come in and talk to us, have questions, share footage. Then we also have CAWT Lab where people can actually start projects on their own and get feedback from the group on those projects. And even get to join us on different things. We actually have some CAUT members joining us for the ABAI conference this summer.
And that's right. And then we are a nonprofit. So we want to be providing free services for the people who can't afford it, but need it. If you're an animal shelter or organization that wants to hear more about this CAUT or construction affection or construction shelter program or other things, we do have free 1 hour presentation that you can request through our website. So we do have organization consultation. We do have private consultation as well. So please reach out whenever you have a behavior challenge that you can't figure out. So we would love to work with you.
Amazing.
Yeah. And we also do have social media. So follow us on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. And yeah,
I will link to all of that in the show notes. That's an amazing resource you guys are providing. It's truly remarkable, all the information you have on there. So head on over to caawt.com, everybody listening in. Sean and Masa, thank you so much. That was really wonderful. And I hope to see you guys in the future.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much
for having us.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Fresh Bites for the Bitey End of the Dog with Sean Will and Masa Nishimuta. If you like the show, please feel free to subscribe, share, and give a rating. And hop on over to AggressiveDog.com for more information about helping dogs with aggression. From the Aggression in Dogs Master Course to webinars from world-renowned experts and even an annual conference, we have options for both pet pros and pet owners to learn more about aggression in dogs.
Thanks for joining me for the Bitey End of the Dog. If you like the show, please feel free to subscribe, share, and give a rating. And hop on over to AggressiveDog.com or TheLooseLeashAcademy.com for more information about webinars, courses, and conferences, all dedicated to helping dogs with aggression issues. And don't forget, the Aggression in Dogs Conference will be happening from October 22nd to 24th with 12 amazing speakers, all streaming from a television studio in Chicago. It's going to be a truly unique event in 2021.